Andrew Mitchell.
You don't have to follow the oratory of the Honourable Gentleman to realise that the spectre of the debate on Iraq in 2003 hangs over this debate today. I sat undecided on the ground in the gangway there, listening with care to the Prime Minister, and marched resolutely into the lobby behind him, a decision which I now regret, which split my constituents, and indeed which split the Mitchell family. It also did huge damage, Mr. Speaker, to the noble cause of Liberal interventionism. So the first advice I wish to give to my right honourable friends, my strong advice to the government, is to publish in full, and there will be plenty more of it in the days to come, the evidence that has led it to conclude that the use of chemical weapons is unequivocally the work of Assad. And my right honourable friend made the point that there is doubt about this. There will be the opportunity in the days to come to help to clear that doubt up, and it will be hugely in the interest of the agencies and the intelligence community that we should do so. We've already seen today in the press allegations of US intercept between members of the regime, and I believe as much of this should be exposed as possible to give our constituents confidence in the position of the government. It does seem clear, however, to me that the awful events which took place in Ghouta on the night of the 21st of August could only have been carried out by the government for the reasons that have been clearly put. But let us have as much light on these matters as we possibly can. My second point is in regard, Mr. Speaker, to the wider situation in Syria, and to make it clear that I believe there is no military solution to this situation. We need a far greater effort to force the parties into a negotiating structure. Above all, that means much greater engagement than there has been with and by Russia and the United States. I understand the reticence of the United States in these matters, but they have been very late to give this crisis their full attention. And the more recent welcome involvement in the Middle East by Secretary Kerry is much to be welcomed. But the UK's less chilly relationship with Putin and with Russia, that can help too. The situation is made worse by the lack of international reaction to the earlier chemical attacks in June as well. At some point, Mr. Speaker, this logjam at the United Nations will be broken, and every sinew must be stretched to achieve that. Britain's immensely strong and effective diplomatic abilities gives us a hugely important part to play in that around the world.
Am I right, honourable friend, allow me?
I will.
I'm most grateful to my right honourable friend. Am I right in believing that whether or not there is a Security Council resolution, it is still legally possible for the whole of the General Assembly to pass a resolution in considering the matter?
Well, I cannot give my honourable friend a direct answer to that, but I refer him to the attorney's legal advice, which I think makes it clear that that is the case. And my third point, Mr. Speaker, is that my right honourable friend, the Foreign Secretary, will recall from our earliest discussions on Syria in the National Security Council that I have been at the hawkish end of the argument about what to do. And that is because, as Development Secretary, I saw the mounting humanitarian catastrophe developing in the early days. I visited the Zaatari camp in its infancy on the Jordanian-Syrian border, into which women and children had come who had been shot at by the Syrian army as they came over the border. That camp has been strongly supported and funded by Britain and is now effectively the fourth biggest city in Jordan. There are now more than 2 million refugees. This is the largest movement of civilians across borders since the genocide in Rwanda in 1994. There is appalling pressure being exerted on the governments and the people of Jordan and of the Lebanon. And more than 100,000 people have been killed, as has already been mentioned.
Yes, a good one. On that point, I'm extremely grateful to my right honourable friend, who is also an extremely good international development secretary. This is the largest humanitarian crisis of the 21st century, not only within Syria, but in the countries around it. One in five people in Lebanon is a refugee, 45,000 people trying to cross the border into Iraq. Is he aware of the views of the NGOs on the ground, like Christian Aid and their partners, who believe that an attack on Syria of any kind could exacerbate the situation further?
Well, the views of the NGOs on this matter are mixed, but what is clear as part of the contribution Britain can make, and other countries more so, to the humanitarian situation is to fund the NGOs and agencies that are working cross-border. Virtually all the aid currently goes through Damascus. There's very little aid cross-border into the rebel-held territory, and that means effectively the international community is stopping the areas that are controlled by the regime from starving, but starving the regime, the areas which the rebels hold. So I make the point. I'm afraid I think I've had my injury time. So I agree with what my honourable friend is saying, but I think it's a complex situation, and on the ground the NGOs disagree on this matter. Now, Mr. Speaker, even at this late stage, we must continue to demand unfettered access for those brilliant people who are risking their lives daily in the humanitarian and relief community, and to whom my honourable friend has referred. And so, finally, Mr. Speaker, we come to the present situation. Chemical weapons have been used. War crimes have been committed. A violation of international humanitarian law has taken place. This is a regime which stoops to gas its own people. It is hard, Mr. Speaker, to think of a situation which more rightly triggers the responsibility to protect, which has been referred to this afternoon. In my view, failure by the international community to act would be far more dangerous than taking evidence-based, proportionate and legal military action as a clear lesson to human rights abusers and dictators who murder and terrorise innocent civilians' populations. Yeah.